Underdog. There I started.
No, F you. There's a difference, right, sir, between underdogs and underrated, right? I mean, underrated.
Very true.
Is Louis Erickson, obviously.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Perpetually underrated, right?
You're
a man who is
really
not rated.
That. I stop it enough.
Underdog, though, is a different animal. Now, underdogs can be players that you love, that you feel are, you know, maybe not blessed with gifts, maybe not blessed with opportunity, but they, damn it, they make the most out of it. And that could be an underdog, right?
That was what, I mean, that was the reason I, you know, my love affair with David Clarkson started. It was, you know, the classic undrafted guy that worked his way up, scrapped his way up, turned himself into an NHLer. How do you not love that story?
Gotta love the story. Gotta love it.
Gotta love
story. Underdogs can be players that are thrown into situations that make the most out of it through adversity. I would give you one right now. Columbus, Sergei Bobrovsky, out 4 to 5 weeks with the wonky, what is it, wonky groin, I think?
Groin, yeah. Is that important for a push-off goaltender?
You think?
A little bit.
So Curtis McElhaney would be an underdog you'd root for. You'd root for him to do well in that position, to not have the Blue Jackets sink down into the depths of the Metropolitan Division like the Islanders did when Nabokov got hurt. So he would be an underdog you'd root for.
Yep, he'd be an underdog as well. Another underdog who was much maligned, much laughed at, much scoffed at, much scorned when he was moved from the, you mentioned the Blue Jackets, from Columbus to Philadelphia, the guffaws heard everywhere outside of one little microphone on one little podcast.
For love of God, here we go.
Steve Mason. Who, by the way, who Sarah Baker today on Twitter points out, I didn't go and actually audit, but I have no reason not to believe Bakes. In 27 games with the Philadelphia Flyers, Bakes tweeted out he has not given up more than 3 goals a game. Steve Mason. The resurrection of the career continues for Steve Mason. That's an underdog, right? That's the guy who was, you know, from the great heights under Ken Hitchcock winning the Calder Trophy to the much maligned and essentially run out of town in Columbus to go to where goaltenders go to die, and that is Philadelphia, only to rise like a phoenix and help the Philadelphia Flyers climb up the, as you put it, meh. Metropolitan Division.
If there are any Blue Jackets fans out there, I do wonder, because one of the things about being an underdog is that you have to have people pulling for you. You have to have people rooting for you. Now, you obviously are Team Mason. We all know that. You're basically a Freemason with the way you support Steve Mason over there. My question for the Columbus Blue Jackets fans in the audience is, do you root for Steve Mason? Do you want to see Steve Mason do well? Or, you know, because I'm trying to put myself in the Columbus shoes here. If I was a Blue Jackets fan, part of me would be, holy hell, would I be bitter that this guy was such a tease as a rookie, and then it fell apart, and he couldn't get his act together. That said, it did work out okay. His flameout gave me a Vezina winner last year, right? So, like, I don't know if I'd be pissed off at him or not. I don't know if I would sit there if I was a Columbus Blue Jackets fan and be like, go with God, Steve Mason. I hope you become the Flyers goaltender they've been searching for since the retirement of Ron Hextall. I don't know. I don't know if I'd be happy or not.
I always think more positively of people than negatively, so I'd like to think that Blue Jackets fans would be cheering for Steve Mason. Unless Steve Mason ends up costing you a playoff spot.
That's true. That's the X factor, isn't it? They are division
totally
rivals
true.
Now. Yeah, completely.
Totally true.
Completely.
If Mason costs you a playoff spot, oh, that stings. Much like if you the Philadelphia Flyers and the Columbus Blue Jackets beat you out for a spot, because of the play of Sergei Bobrovsky, all of a sudden you're no longer a fan.
Now, speaking of the Flyers,
happy to cheer for him somewhere else. Yeah, speaking of the Flyers.
Speaking of the Flyers, this is by the way, the underdog thing is the question of the day on today's podcast. Give us your favorite underdog, the biggest underdog as a player, not as a team, but as a player in the National Hockey League currently. PuckDaddyBlog at Yahoo.com, at Wyshynski, at Jeff Merrick on Twitter, hashtag at MVSW. The Flyers also, I think, have another guy who I consider to be an underdog, and he's been an underdog for pretty much his entire career because of the way he used to be, and that'd be Steve Downey. Steve Downey, to me, is a quintessential underdog. Always going to get grief for the shenanigans as a younger player back when he was at the Flyers. Always a guy who never gets appreciated for his contributions outside of stats, and now is an integral part of the best line on the Flyers, one of the best lines in the league for the last 2 weeks, himself, Sean Couturier, and Matt Reed, the engine for the Flyers' mm-hmm. revival in many ways.
I love his story. It's a hard story, too. I mean, the guy can barely hear out of one ear, if at all, due to an automobile accident when he was very young, where he sat in the passenger seat and literally watched his father die. Right? That's Steve Downey. How do you not cheer for a guy like that? And, you know, we talked about Brent Burns the other day on the podcast and his record as a forward with the San Jose Sharks, which this year so far is perfect. I think it's like 13-0-1. And overall, it's like 28-9-2 or something like that. It's berserk. And Steve Downey's that guy as well, whether it was with the Avalanche, whether it's now with the Philadelphia Flyers. When you have Steve Downey in your lineup, your team just flat out wins. And mm-hmm. it's true. And it's happened enough times with enough teams so you can't just say it's a coincidence, right? It's happened long enough now that you say to yourself, that was an excellent trade for the Philadelphia Flyers. What the hell were Colorado thinking? Unless you buy the story that it was because he hit Gabe Landeskog in training camp.
That's right. That's, well, we'll never know, will we? It'll be in the pantheon of stories involving Craig Janney, Ted Nolan's wife, all this other stuff.
Oh, you jeez. Yeah, well, I mean, so what was it? Well, one day after the Varlamov thing, Downey gets traded. People are trying to join those two things together. But mm-hmm. I don't know if there's anything there. Not that I've heard.
Yeah, because you never see stories break to affect the news cycle. A massive concussion lawsuit has been handed to the National Hockey League. 5 hours later, Rogers has all the hockey for the next 12 years, ladies and gentlemen. Pay no attention to the concussion lawsuit behind the curtain. It's amazing. It's pretty amazing. Yeah. I have a few underdogs. Now, you know, you bring up a great point about the backstory of these guys, and sometimes the struggles that they have off the ice can contribute to the kind of players that they are. I don't necessarily have any of those guys here. I don't really have your Masterton kind of players on my list. But let me give you three more, because Downey was one. Steven Oleksii of the Washington Capitals.
Oh, yeah.
Spare part defenseman, really good skater, decent guy. Just from a guy who covers the Capitals more than other teams, because I'm paid to. A guy that you kind of root for to hold a spot on that blue line, even if that blue line does need a revamp. So he'd be one of my guys. Nathan Gerby, obviously. So this is also one of these things where the underdog is usually someone who isn't blessed with physical prowess. I mean, no one is looking at Zdeno Chara and saying he's underdog, right? But people can look at Nathan Gerby, who can sit on Chara's shoulders and become Master Blaster from Thunderdome, and say that he is an underdog in this league. And Gerby has the size disadvantage, but also now has that backstory of being dropped by the Buffalo Sabres, ending up in Carolina and playing some really good hockey for them this year. So Nathan Gerby would be the other one. And then I have one that I'll admit, I can't tell you if he's underrated or an underdog. And I'm going to probably guess you're going to say underrated, because I'm sure that there are people out there that are going to be screaming East Coast bias, this guy's a star, blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
I consider Oliver Ekman-Larsson to be an underdog for one particular reason.
Why?
Which is that he doesn't get the renown that other players get. Now, that could easily be translated into underrated, right? But mm-hmm. to me, it's like he has to overcome that. He's going to have to overcome that bias, that attention given to other defensemen in this league that are on teams that are in the Eastern Conference or aren't named Phoenix. And to me, I want to see him achieve. I want to see him rewarded for his talent and for how good he is. And for me, that's the hallmarks of being an underdog. It's like you want him to succeed in the face of forces trying to keep him from succeeding. And to me, the PHWA voters that don't give this guy top two in the Norris voting this season might be those people.
You know my love affair with Oliver Ekman-Larsson. I mean, you know how long I've felt that this guy is going to be the best of that crop of young Swedish defensemen, like as far as a complete guy. But you know what the proof is this year more than anything else? Because, listen, we've talked about it on this podcast. Other commentators have noted how well this guy plays and how significant a piece he is for the Coyotes and will be at the Olympics for Team Sweden. You know what the proof in the pudding is this year for me?
What's that?
Mark Stone. all of a sudden Mark Stone is looked at as a legitimate, like, solid national hockey, like, and he's paired up with Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Mm-hmm. It gets a lot easier to be a bona fide NHLer at the top level when you're playing with someone like Oliver Ekman-Larsson. One of the hallmarks of great players, you've brought this up countless times, is does he make other players around him better? Does he significantly improve the lot in life on the ice for players around him? Look no further than Mark Stone.
Yeah.
For evidence of what Oliver Ekman-Larsson has been able to do with the Phoenix Coyotes. I'm with you 100%. I think it's a combination of both. I think that's the classic underdog slash underrated player. I think that is the one guy that bridges both things, underdog and underrated.
Yeah, for sure. And I'll give you another underdog underrated guy on the Devils, because I saw a few tweets from somebody making this case, and I kind of agree. Eric Jelena has had one of the best rookie seasons in the league this year, but good luck, sir, entering the conversation with Seth Jones and Torrey Krug as far as defensemen who might have a shot at the Calder. But El Jelena has been great, really good. One of the best Devils rookies I've seen come up in a really long time, to be honest with you.
You know, we got Katie Strang coming on in a couple of moments, and speaking of rookies of the year, Chris Kreider kind of making some noise now, eh?
Yeah.
For my underdog, and this has got to be the ultimate one, because he's been called out by someone in public office to get kicked off the team. Is there a bigger underdog than David Desharnais, who now has finally started to turn things? I mean, the mayor of Montreal, you know, one of his first, you know, public ordinances implored the Montreal Canadiens to send him to the minors, send him to the Hamilton Bulldogs of the American Hockey League. How can you not cheer for a guy who's being called out by the mayor of his city?
It's pretty
being
amazing.
Called out by someone. Yeah, exactly. Someone who wears a chain. Like, that's never happened before.
Anytime you can get the municipal pressure on somebody, anytime it's you against the government, that's quintessential underdog
story.
Well, I mean,
the thing is, like, Denny Cordero has stuck his nose, hello Shane Doan, in hockey business before and not been afraid to do so and been kind of proud of it.
Oh,
so
he was that guy with the Shane Doan stuff?
Denny Cordero. Oh, yeah,
my
baby.
God.
I know. Same dude.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, dude.
Yeah.
So we asked you about underdogs and getting some really interesting answers. By the way, from the Department of Corrections, you were not talking about, I think he was a Penguins farmhand, Mark Stone. You're talking about Michael Stone.
What did I say? Mark Stone?
Mark Stone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. From the readers chiming in, Christophe Perreault, my favorite underdog is P.K. Subban with Team Canada, because apparently he is an underdog for that team. Listen, I think it's ridiculous. I think it's preposterous. I think it's unfair, but protect the puck, baby. You can't be making that mistake when you're on the bubble like that. That mistake
it was
you
a
made
bad
last
play.
Night.
I know. Oh. That was a bad one.
It broke my heart. You and I are both Team Subban in the biggest way. And to see him make that play and knowing the Vultures are circling this guy just pissed me off.
And but you know what? He did a real – which goal was it? It was a shot from the point. I think it was tipped in front. I think it was a Desharnais goal yesterday. Did you notice P.K. Subban dropping down the right side? And what P.K. Subban did to, God, who was it? Anyway, which led to the game-tying goal. Mm. It was one of the sneakiest slew-foots you've seen all season.
On P.K.
Subban? Go back and watch that. Subban did it, dropping down
from
the point.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He doesn't...
To clear up space for the point.
Seemed the type.
Sneaky slew-foot.
Sneaky slew-foot. Never seen him do that before. Chris Gattuso, I think I got that right. Andrew Shaw, Blackhawks, wins faceoffs, front of the net, corners, protects players, plays PP and PK, great locker room guy. But again, you know, that's sort of the argument for underrated. Underdog, dude you root for, without question. He ain't a star on that team. He does the dirty work, and he bled for you, people. Like Jesus. He bled for you.
Before the night is over, one of you will betray me. I had the fight of the year with Antoine Roussel as well. Holy smokes, that was it.
Michael J. Piazza writes in, Darren Helm, very good choice, about as unlucky as it gets, but he's so damn exciting when he's on the ice. And that brings us to another aspect of the underdog versus underrated. Underrated guys play a lot. Underdog guys sometimes can't stay in the lineup, and that's why you root for them. You root for them to be healthy. You root for them to get back. Like, for example, is Mike Green an underdog player now at this point of his career, based on the injuries he's had, based on him trying to get back? Is he a guy you root for? Now, granted, I don't know if he's the guy that most NHL fans would root for, because I think most NHL fans think he's a douche, which is unfair because other guys ride Vespas besides him. I think he's one of these guys. He's a combination of two factors in the underdog player, which is the guy who was injured and the guy who lost it and is trying to get it back.
Yeah, that's an interesting phenomenon, that type of player, the player that keeps trying to come back from injury, because I think I was kind of a solo voice in this one as well. I rooted for every single Peter Forsberg comeback attempt. I love the fact that this guy would not
just
go gentle.
Just to see if he could do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just love the idea. I just love the idea of the guy that says, "In my brain, I'm not done. Even though my body is saying I'm done, my brain isn't there yet." Like, there's an old saying in sports, and it's really true. The minute you think about retirement, you're retired. Like, if you talk to any kid who's like 22 years old, retirement, that's not even something that enters my mind. But if you start talking to guys in like their early 30s, and they've entertained the idea, and if they're really honest about themselves and they go back, they say to themselves, at what point did you think it was over for you? If they're honest, they'll say, the minute I started to think about retirement, everything changed for me. Something became different. And that's why I loved Peter Forsberg. It was so obvious that in his brain, he would not say the R word. But his body was saying, dude, that's enough. We're done. We're finished. Like, his brain, to me, I love athletes that don't mentally crack.
Right.
We all love that. We say we love that. But then when Peter Forsberg happened, I mean, how much scorn was heaped on Peter Forsberg? Oh, dude, leave the stage while they're still clapping. Oh, dude, you're going to ruin your legacy. Oh, Peter Forsberg, just go away. We're sick of you. I don't know how people didn't get behind the story of a guy whose brain still didn't crack, and he still couldn't say retirement to himself, even though every part of his body was screaming, no, don't put me out there again. Peter Forsberg's brain said, no, we're going out there again. We're trying one more time.
I think I
cheered every single comeback, every time he tried.
Some of the scorn was, if I remember correctly, towards the end of this series of comebacks, it was like the only team he wanted to play for was Colorado, right?
And they kept giving him a chance, though.
I know, but then it becomes a thing where you can't. He is one of the single most popular players in the history of the franchise. Like, yeah. Then you'd have to say no to that. And then it puts a team in a spot when a guy wants to come back like that sometimes.
I don't know.
Just like, for example, when Marty Brodeur decides to play one more year next year. You know, it's going to be very...
But he's still playing well. Like, you can't argue with it. Come on, you can't argue with it, bud.
Chris Sigurdsson writes in, Jared Spurgeon... Undrafted, okay. Undersized, but holds his own in the D zone and is a solid second pair D man. I agree with that one too. That's a really good one. Chaos 99. Oh, Chaos 99. We haven't heard from him. What? Sorry.
Wasn't Spurgeon drafted by the Islanders but just never signed? He was drafted.
Well, he could have been drafted, but then he went back in and then he became a free agent, right? Is that how it worked? Maybe.
I don't know.
I'll admit not knowing the complete bio. I didn't catch the Jared Spurgeon story on Lifetime this past weekend, so I didn't really know.
Okay, sorry.
Chaos of 99, who we haven't heard from in a while. Does Sean Couturier count, or did he play himself into the hearts and minds of the general public yesterday? No, he played himself into the hearts and minds of the general public with his job on Malkin in the playoffs a couple of years back in that Pittsburgh series. That's when he arrived. I mean, that was when people stood up and said, holy shit, this guy can do that to Malkin and score? Without question. Without question.
Yeah.
Dangle Snipe Selly.
Oof. Great one.
That's combining all of my favorite hockey Twitter cliches. Steve Bernier reminds me a lot of Clarkie on his 30-goal season, meaning Clarkson. He's in the mode where he's like, oh, shit, I can score. Bernier's a guy that I think is an underdog. I think you root for him. I think he's been in some bad spots and clearly has bounced around like a super happy fun ball around this league. Joe Pack writes in, I'm cheering for Bryzgalov, who's in the most impossible situation in a conservative NHL. We need guys like him. He is definitely an underdog story, Bryzgalov, without question.
Yeah, he is. Yep. And listen, I want him to be successful in Edmonton because I think the NHL is a more interesting place when he's there. And not because, you know, let's make fun of the guy that, you know, talks about, you know, Siberian tigers and huskies and, you know, contemplates the universe and where he fits into the world metaphysically and as an actual human being. But I just think that I just love the idea of there being room for a goaltender that's a little bit out there. But I don't think that he's a little bit out there. I think that Ilya Bryzgalov just thinks about things that normal human beings think about but never talk about. I think we all think about things like that. We just never talk about them.
Great. We think about how a husky is a beautiful woman.
Listen, dude, what did we go on about here on the podcast a couple days ago? my desire to have a glass eye.
Right.
That was Ilya Bryzgalov saying that exact same thing to Tim Panaccio, right? He'd be the biggest freak in Philadelphia. But because it's you and me on a podcast, somehow we get a free pass.
I like to have two glass eyes. You one glass eye, you put in your eye, and you look around, and you see people. And then the other glass eye,
right?
Maybe you make a stained glass. Maybe you make like a church in St. Petersburg with the glass eyes. So I'd like a two glass eyes, and then I play goal, and maybe hopefully puck not hit the glass eye.
Or if he started bringing up like Star Wars characters in every interview, like you do every podcast, he'd be the goofiest guy in town. But you're just like Greg Wyshynski, one of the hundred most powerful people of influence, power and influence in the NHL as per the Hockey News. You're not laughed at of your industry.
Why you have to be mad? Lando Calrissian cuts a deal with the Empire to protect all of his workers in Bespin. They're making all of the gas. They make the gas for all the people. Why you have to be mad? He looks out for them. He is their friend. Lobot.
I want him to do an interview like that with Mark Spector. I really want to hear him talk Star Wars with Speck.
Oh, man. All right.
But you get a free pass, and Briz is a freak. Okay,
got it. Two more before we hit the intro. Dubrika Shaw writes in, players like Jágr and Solane, who should be done but keep putting up points, are easy to root for. Underdogs? Oh, man. I don't know if Solane is an underdog, but I'd venture to say, based off of what we saw in the playoffs last year, Jágr was an underdog coming into this season. What do you say?
Yeah, because, you know, he couldn't find the back of the net and couldn't keep up. And we thought, uh-oh, this really is the end for Jágr. Guess what? Not so much.
Yes, I completely agree with you on that. I think he kind of became an underdog player. Finally, Jackie writes in, every single Avs defender, if I had to pick one, Johnson, the guy is playing great and gets no respect. And then one more, because I saw this one coming in, Matthew Toy. And this is one that I need a ruling on from you for as far as an underdog, underrated,
right,
or other, okay?
Okay.
Martin Saint-Louis.
Oh, God.
He's a tough one because, like, can a 100-point forward be underrated?
With as much hardware as him, right?
How can he be? But at the same time, like, did he ever get the credit Richards got or Vinny got or Stamkos gets?
No, because he always seemed like a blue. He always looked and seemed and carried himself like a blue collar guy.
Right.
Like, you know, those people still buy the blue collar aesthetic of Bruce Springsteen, even though he's a bajillionaire, right? Even though, you know, his life is completely different, but you still think he's that guy singing about, you know, going down to the river. You know, they still buy it, even though you know that it's not true.
He's singing with the common man.
Even though he's not, right? Even though he's not the common man at all. Try knocking on his door and see if he comes out to play catch in the backyard. I'm guessing Bruce ain't going to do that.
He probably was an underdog earlier in his career. Okay, but I don't think he's an underdog now.
Coming out of the St. John Flames, he was an underdog.
Yeah,
and there was going to be no room for him.
Art Ross, Hart, Bing, Bing, Art Ross, Bing, and also the Lindsay, 4-time NHL All Star,
and we got to go because Katie's standing by. Goofball.
Okay, 100-point season. So Do you want to just spike the intro? Get to Katie.
Yeah, I'd rather hear her than me. Katie Strang joining us. Hey, Katie, the woman who needs no introduction and who's limbering up, doing some stretches and some yoga poses before the podcast to get ready for her interview today. Katie, our question of the day today is, who is your favorite underdog player in the NHL? The guy who's doing it, to quote Phil Collins, against all odds. Who's yours?
Well, that's a good question. And to clarify, By limbering up, I mean snacking on cheese curls while sitting in my apartment wearing sweatpants.
Katie Strang.
I am ready.
Hold on, Katie Strang.
Okay.
What brand of cheese curls? What brand are we talking about here? Generic or Jack's?
This is embarrassing. Trader Joe's jalapeno cheese. They're gluten-free. I'm on a bit of a kick. I'm a little ashamed to admit that to you guys, but they're pretty delicious nonetheless.
Katie Strang, I'll tell you right now, somebody on this podcast, not named Jeff Merrick, killed an entire thing of Trader Joe's spicy hummus in the last 2 days, because that shit is really good. So no shame.
Yeah.
No shame for splurging on the Trader Joe's.
Okay, thank you. Although, absolving me.
Although, as a resident of New York City, how long do you have to stand online at the Trader Joe's to procure these items?
Or stand in line?
You know, I'm very strategic about my Trader Joe's visits. So I try to go at, like, the most obscure hour ever. So I hit it after the gym at, like, 3 p.m. on a Tuesday afternoon. And usually that guarantees a pretty seamless checkout experience. But, I mean, if there's the pumpkin-flavored cream cheese available, I will wait 30 minutes in line for that.
My girlfriend lives in the East Village, and there's one there. And every single time I pass it, no matter what time of the day, no matter what day, there's not only a line snaking around the entire supermarket to get to the registers, there's a line out the door to enter the place to procure your items to then get on another line. It's insane. So kudos to you for working the system.
It really is.
Absolutely.
When I see lines like that for food or for coffee or anything like that, I always say to myself, man, it's a good thing drugs are illegal.
Right?
And on that note,
who's your underdog,
Katie?
Let me
ask you guys, what's the threshold, or how are we defining underdog?
Well, see, we're different.
Because I immediately, like, I think little and small and scrappy, so I immediately think like a Matt Zuccarello, Polly Pocket type player.
Ooh, Zuccarello is a great one. That, you know what? You hit it perfectly, because we've made the distinction between underrated and underdog. And
okay,
so not your.
Yeah, so I like Zuccarello, and you know who I like? Okay, I'm gonna take it a little bit of a different direction.
All right.
This is a guy that I have covered for many years, and you will not meet a finer gentleman in the sport. He is the most mild-mannered, but, I mean, I'm telling you, nicest, kindest, articulate guys, but can be brutally honest.
Jeremy Roenick.
Stole my thunder. Franz Nielsen.
Really?
And he rarely gets the credit that he deserves, because I'll tell you what, he's one of the most defensively sound, skilled centers that there is. You know, I wouldn't quite put him on par with Louis Erickson, but I do think he's a guy that is vastly underrated, doesn't get the credit that he deserves, plays often opponents' top lines, and I think he can be, when used in the right way, a very effective guy. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a guy that a lot of GMs give Garcinoe a call about toward the deadline.
Interesting. All right, so like let's move on to Henrik Lundqvist. So a lot of people were really upset with this contract based on term and based on money. They're all idiots. Tell them why, Katie.
Well, honestly, like, I get that. I think there are some legitimate criticisms to make on this deal in terms of, you know, length and dollar amount. But, I mean, what were the Rangers really going to do? I mean, you're going to let him walk to sign elsewhere for $9 million a year? I mean, that's just bad asset management. Are you going to trade him? That was never going to happen either. So, I mean, to me, look, you have a guy that's been remarkably consistent for you the past 8 seasons. He's been the team MVP seven years running. He's been a Vezina Trophy finalist 5 of the last 8 years. He has a .920 career save percentage and something like 531 career appearances for the Rangers. Those guys are hard to find. Like, do you really want to haggle over $500,000 a year and risk, you know, not only shattering his confidence, alienating your franchise goaltender, having these protracted negotiations drag on and possibly submarine you for this season if it's really lingering and hampering him in terms of just not letting him focus? I just don't think it's worth it. I just don't. Like, you know that you're going to pay the guy. You know that he's going to ask for a raise. He's making 6.875 now. It's not that much more. And I know we're talking about a lot of money, but, you know, when you look at market value and guys like, you know, Tuukka Rask and Pekka Rinne making $7 million a year. I mean, Corey Crawford signed an extension for 6 years, $36 million. If he's making 6 a year, I think he can definitely make the case that Lundqvist should be making 8.5.
It's your turn, Merrick.
Okay, I thought you were warm. I thought you were warming up to say something to Katie.
No,
there.
No, I was waiting for you.
I'm with you about the New York Rangers, you know, being over a barrel here. They had no options. I mean, Newport Sports had, you know, all the cards in their pocket, and you know, were waiting to spring it at that time. Why, in your estimation, though, did the deal get done right now as opposed to this deal getting done before? Did the Rangers really think that they could, you know, get him at a 4-year term or at a 5-year term? My only curiosity about the deal is, why is it done now, beginning of December?
Yeah, and to add to that curious timing, I mean, what donkeys do we all look like for hyping up this goalie controversy on Monday, hammering Lundqvist with questions about his future with the organization? 2 days later, he gets $60 million, pretty much. So, yeah, the timing is strange. And what I was told is that, you know, negotiations began the summer. They were an ongoing process. They took a couple weeks off here and there, but that Newport was happened to be in town this week. And you know, I know a lot of people just reading into the tea leaves will think that, you know, the deal might have been, I guess, precipitated by the whole, you know, Talbot getting to start brouhaha, but what I'm told, it didn't. You know, that it was just merely coincidental that Newport had a previously scheduled visit to be in town. So, you know, once they were face to face, they sat down. You know, Newport did want 8 years in length initially, and the Rangers obviously did not. And I think that's legitimate considering Lundqvist's age. And I think both sides, you know, were willing to bend a little bit, but I don't think there was any doubt that this deal was going to get done. I think both sides are pretty lucky that it never got as tenuous as it could have.
I thought it was really cute that Lundqvist before the season was like, hey guys, we're just not going to talk about the contract. Like, the moment he has adversity in the season, the first question isn't going to be, are you thinking about your contract,
right,
Hank? I mean, it was so delightfully naive of him to think that. So yeah, I think it's going to be beneficial to the team and to him to have this thing done and then go forward from there. But as far as the Rangers go, so obviously things have definitely turned around since the beginning of the season when they were on that crazy long road trip and things weren't going very well. 14-0, not an overtime anything yet for them. Where do you see this team now? How have they changed in 28 games under Alain Vigneault?
Well, I think they've gotten marginally better. I think they've gotten healthier, and that's been a big boost. You know, once they got Hadlin and Callahan back, that made a difference. And I think you could definitely tell when you have a healthy Rick Nash, that makes a difference. I mean, he can be such a dynamic player when he's on. And you know, for a 3-game stretch before the last game, he was really physically engaged and he looked really good, really strong. That obviously makes a difference. But in terms of comparing this team to, you know, years past, I'm not convinced that they're much better than a 500 team. And let's be honest, that might be good enough to get them to the second round of the Eastern Conference, you know, playoffs. Like, I mean, they could have a relatively easy, you know, just with the way the playoff format is devised now. Like, and how bad the Metro is, they could get to the second round easily and still be a pretty middling, underwhelming team. But, you know, I get the sense that they'll probably put, you know, some wins together and trend upwards a bit. But I still don't get the, you know, the impression that this is a team that can do damage in the postseason. I really don't.
What about Chris Kreider and doing damage in the Calder Trophy race? Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think Seth Jones is going to be really tough to beat just because it's so remarkable to me what he's been able to do in terms of stepping into that role and playing the type of guys he's playing against and handling that at such a young age. To me, he's still the guy to beat. Chris Kreider, you know, has had a definite resurgence, but as we've seen, he can be really inconsistent. You know, he started the year in the minors. He's a really good couple first days of camp, and he started in Hartford. You know, I don't think many people would have believed that would have been the case had they seen, you know, what a remarkable spring he had in his playoff debut 2 years ago. But he's kind of hot in the cold. So I definitely think he's flourishing under Vigneault, and I think, We've seen him play with a lot more confidence, but in terms of a bigger sample size, I think he's got to be able to show that he can sustain this level of play.
Looking over at the other team in the direct New York area, we're not, of course, talking about Jersey's team, which is their actual, you know, tag now, marketing tag, Jersey's team. Because, you know, South Jersey, all Devils fans. I don't know if you knew that, guys. South Jersey, huge.
Oh, I
all
no Devils.
You never, you won't find a single Flyers fan in South Jersey, right? Anyways, the New York Islanders are out of the playoffs, right? They're never going to make it. They are right now 12 points in back of the top wild card, 10 points in back of the other wild card spot, and 7 points in back of the Rangers. They're done, right? Or do you not think they're done?
I think they're done. I mean, listen, I really just have not seen, you know, when you have a year like you have, like last year, which I think many people assume to be, you know, a significant building block. You got to move. I mean, that's not enough. You got to use that, Ashley, to move forward, and we haven't seen that. And at this point, I can't say I fault the players. You know, I can't imagine why Garth Snow still has his job. You know, he seems to have. I mean, honestly, like he seems to have carte blanche to just, you know, make a lot of questionable decisions. I was very critical of the Vanek Molson deal when it happened. And I'm even more so now. Like, how do you not, you're going to pull off a blockbuster deal early in the season to shake things up. Why not do it to address your most glaring immediate needs? None of which have gone away. They've only gotten worse. So, you know, you put your players in a bad position. They don't have goaltending. They don't have, you know, nearly enough help on D. So you have, you know, Travis Hamonic and Andrew McDonald logging minutes that, you know, they really shouldn't be. And, you know, they're trying to carry the load all by themselves. I don't think Jack Capuano is the right coach for this team. I think he's a passionate guy. But in terms of cachet, I think a young team like this needs someone with more of it. And unfortunately, I think that the Islanders are just too cheap to go that route. I think if they don't let Capuano go, I think that's an indictment on the franchise, just being too, you know, unwilling to spend the money that it takes to actually win. Now, I think this road trip will be a really obviously critical test for them. You know, they've lost 5 straight, and then they, you know, play the big boys in the West. So it'll be really interesting to see how they handle it. But, God, can you imagine how frustrated John Tavares must be right now? I mean, that kid is really wants to win, and I can't imagine how difficult this has been, you know, in his first year as the captain.
It'll be disappointing for him this year. I mean, outside of winning gold, this is going to be a tough year for John Tavares with the New York Islanders. Katie, curious, and sticking with the Islanders as well, and it is curious how Garth Snow is still there, but how much really do you lay at the feet of Garth Snow versus how much you lay at the wallet of Charles Wong?
Well, it's both. I mean, when you see a franchise that's mired at the bottom of the standings every year, I mean, a culture change has to start from the top, right? So you have to have an owner that is committed to moving the team in the right direction and is willing to spend money. And you know what? The Islanders don't have that in Charles Wong, and that's unfortunate. And that ties a lot of people's hands, and in many ways, I'm sure Garth. And it doesn't seem like Snow is held culpable for a lot of shortcomings, and that's a problem, too, and it has a trickle-down effect. I mean, I think the Islanders have a lot of talent. I really do, and I think they have a lot of good young players, so it must be so frustrating for them, and it must hinder their development to just be, you know, immersed in this culture of net, you know, always one step forward, two steps back. So when I say that I think that they're done, I think they can still make a run. I think they can make a surge. I mean, look, the East is so mediocre that they could make a push and make the playoffs again. But, you know, the Islanders have to be willing to make some changes, and they have to be willing to make the right ones.
Indeed, indeed. And then I guess finally we should probably touch on the 3-time Stanley Cup champion New Jersey Devils.
Oh, jeez.
What? Is there a problem?
Wow.
what are your you've covered Jágr in the past. You've seen what he's done this year. What are your thoughts on the kind of year that Jágr's had with the Devils?
I mean, whatever he's having, I'll have some of that because I'm 29 and I already need Botox. And this guy's leading the team with 23 points. How old? Yeah, I'll, you know what I mean. Like it's incredible. It's a great story, you know. And it's such the Devil's way, right? Like people always count the Devils out and they never get any credit. And you know, Marty Brodeur, you know, always proves people wrong. And now you got Jágr playing for them too, just showing people up. It's incredible. I mean, it's going to be a fun story to watch. And obviously it'll be interesting to see, you know, how he handles like minutes as the season progresses. But I think you got to give Pete DeBoer a lot of credit. He really gets the most, I think, out of that team. I have a lot of time for Pete DeBoer. I think he's such a smart guy. I think he handles that team so well. And, you know, they get hit with a lot of, you know, injuries and, You lose guys like Kovalchuk and Parise and Clarkson in successive years, and they're still hanging tough. So they're going to be a fun team to watch. I think they could surprise some people.
How long do you think Lou wants to do it? How long do you think Lou wants to hang in the game?
That's a good question. You know, I saw someone ask that recently, if I thought that, like, he'd hang it up in a couple of years. I don't know. He's still pretty spry. He's like that Stan Fischler, you know what I mean? Like, Stan Fischler still bites to the rink sometimes, you know what I mean? And Lou is still very sharp, very shrewd. And until he's not, that's his baby. So I don't know. Yeah. I think he does it as long as he wants to do it and as long as he feels like he's, you know, still got a good handle on things, which I think could be a very long time. I mean, the franchise and him are so inextricably linked at this point. Like, he's so enmeshed in their culture that it's really difficult to imagine a team without him.
Well, he is their culture. I mean, he's the guy who created that culture. I mean, they were the Devils were only around for like five or six years, I think, before Lou took over the team. And then since then, it's been the, you know, the Jersey Lamarillo. So, I mean, it'd be interesting to see what does happen, you know, if he ever did go with new ownership in place, like what direction the team would go.
You guys are closer to it than me, obviously.
I'll tell you what, like, I have no idea who would be the heir apparent if he ever did leave. You know, like, I have no idea. I really don't.
I mean,
it would be so shocking, I think, to the system to see anyone else there but him.
It would be bizarre. Do you always get the feeling, though, that you guys are closer to it than I am? You get the feeling that he kind of runs that organization like a varsity club? That he's running this like, as if he's still running the Providence Friars?
Meaning what, exactly?
Well, in a way, I mean,
he's always looking for booster money and, you know.
There's a band up in the corner. No, but, I mean, he runs it very much like he is in control of everything, and he looks for and tries to develop character of person as much as he looks for character of player. I mean, that's why it really hurt Lou when Scott Niedermeyer left to go to Anaheim. I remember listening to interviews with Lou, and he said, you know, that was one that really hurt him personally because he does have these types of relationships with players, not unlike, you know, someone like Red Berenson would have with his players at University of Michigan.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, Lou's big thing is I always try to separate the person and the player, and he's funny that way. Like, I think he's sort of a throwback in that sense. And you don't see guys that pay that much attention, I guess, to character and integrity. And I think that's part of why that they always surprise people and they always find ways to win is because he does, I think, go that extra mile to find that. You know, even if you walk in that, if you go into that locker room, it is one of the most friendly, welcoming, like, guys will stay there for an hour if you want.
Right.
I mean, Johan Hedberg, when he was playing there, like, he could be playing that night, and he would talk to you about healthcare in Sweden for an hour if you wanted to. You know what I mean? Like, the guys were just, like, so open and welcoming, and it's a good environment. And I know that there he's caught some flack recently. I don't know if you guys read those tweets about Ryan Clough being guarded by a bodyguard while he was undressing. So I understand that the picture that I am painting is probably directly clashing with that. And maybe that's a little bit of an anomaly, but I think there's something to that. And you know what? And I guess the point is, even if Lou does leave, I imagine that is so firmly entrenched in their culture that it'll never really leave, you know, that it'll kind of persist, live on.
Well, the great Katie Strang, please do enjoy the rest of your jalapeno cheese curls.
Thank you. I will. My waistline will not.
All right. Take care,
Bye,
thanks,
guys.
Katie.
Katie Strang, ladies and gentlemen. The best example I can give of that Devils thing she's talking about. I was stunned when I covered the 2012 final. How long Brodeur would stay in the locker room to talk to people after games? It's remarkable. He would hold court after games for quite a while. And just chat about what happened, where it's all going, this, that, and the other thing. There's a lot of guys in that room that like to talk, you know. Yager being one of them. I mean, Yager's one of the better talkers in this league still. He's so self-deprecating that it's always fun to listen to. But
man, our good buddy Bobby Holík was a treat to cover.
Oh yeah,
right. You always want a quote? Go to Holík's locker. Go to Holík's little booth there for sure. He'll stand there. He's not going out the back door. He'll stand there and talk to you. It's a great point, too, and I hadn't really explored it or thought about it as deeply as Katie has, but she's right. When you go look at the history of the New Jersey Devils under Lou Lamoriello, those are pretty accommodating guys.
Yeah.
They really are, generous with their time, easy to deal with the media. You always have, you know, thoughtful things to say.
Which is
a really
amazing because
it's a polite group of athletes.
It's one of the least marketed teams. His teams, during the Cup years, one of the least marketed teams in the league. They would never sell those players in Jersey. It was one of the reasons why there were two reasons why they didn't really capture the imagination of the majority of Jersey hockey fans. One being, of course, they were boring as shit. And two being that they didn't really send, you know, who would be a good example? Bruce Driver to the local auto dealership, you know, or anything like that. Terrible example because he wasn't there in the Cup years, but you know what I'm trying to say.
Come see Bruce Driver.
The auto dealer. What? That's a perfect. His name is Driver. Oh,
I know.
God. What a genius!
That was ideal.
I didn't even realize that.
Oh, you're so clever, Greg Wyshynski. Oh, by the way,
we're not doing the intro.
We're not doing the intro today. We're not doing the intro today until the end of the show.
Okay.
That's what we're
going to
do.
I'm not clever because, as Anthony Boyer writes in, online, really wish, and Jonathan Hawks writes in, thank you, Jeff Merrick, for calling out Wyshynski's use of online instead of inline. That's a weird East Coast English oddity. Now, it's a Jersey thing. It's always been a Jersey thing, and I've been called out on it forever.
Yeah.
You wait in line, not online. You shop online. No, you wait online. I'm online for this thing.
Yeah, whatever.
What are you doing
here?
Where can I meet you? I'll be online for this movie. That's where you meet.
For this movie?
For this movie. The for multiplex.
I didn't know this. Mike Majeski, Wish. Mm-hmm. I'm with Team Wish on this one. And a large pizza is called a large pie when you order.
Yeah, large pie.
Is that true?
Yep.
You've never ordered a large pizza.
Not in Jersey. You say pepperoni pie. Or you don't even say pizza or pie. Just say I'll take half pepperoni, half sausage. The pie is inferred.
It's just implied that it's a large one?
It's implied, sir.
Oh, man.
Couple things statistically that I've been looking at in this league. I mentioned the wild card races. Are you up on the wild card races, sir? Do you know where the wild cards are at this point?
I have a glance, but I haven't for a while, so fill me in.
Your playoff,
Hockey
teams,
Central tonight. I
your
know
playoff
something.
Teams in the Western Conference are Chicago, St. Louis, Colorado, and the Central, San Jose, Anaheim, and L.A. The wild card race, as you know, we're going to take two wild cards. Doesn't matter where they're coming from.
That's right.
Minnesota and Phoenix are your wild card teams. Vancouver, 1 point out of the wild card. And Dallas is 7 points back of Minnesota for the wild card spot. They're actually closer to the wild card than they are to the third place team in the Central. Colorado.
Put the two wild cards in the West in the Eastern Conference right now, and where are they as far as playoffs?
You mean Minnesota and Phoenix?
Mm-hmm.
Minnesota and Phoenix. Minnesota would be third in the East, tied with Montreal, and Phoenix would be fourth in the East.
Where would Dallas be?
Dallas would be. Dallas is got 30 points. If you were gonna, okay, let's. If Dallas was in the Metropolitan Division, they'd be second.
Crazy, eh?
Yeah, right.
Dallas isn't gonna make the play. Dallas to me seems like the one team at the end of the year is gonna be like kicking why do we play in the West? Why do we play with these teams? If we were in the East, it would have been bonus fries and we're in the playoffs quick.
They just need to learn how to cry better like Detroit did, and then they can get into the Eastern Conference one day.
Wow. Like Trolling 101 by Greg Wyszynski. They were promises.
Dude, I know they were promises.
When they allowed themselves to go to the West, first right of refusal, they're going back to the East.
I know playing in the Western Conference severely affected the growth of their fan base. They sell it all the time. Severely impacted their success on the ice. They've won like every Stanley Cup. I know it really impacted that franchise. And really, the NHL doesn't need Detroit in the Western Conference as a stalking horse for teams that no one really cares about. So they'll tune in and watch Detroit and then see another team. Of course they do. So, you know, it's one of those situations where I feel Detroit really does belong in the Eastern Conference. Boston, Montreal, Detroit are your teams in the Atlantic Division. In the Metro, terrible. Pittsburgh, Washington, and the Rangers are your playoff teams. Wild cards, Tampa Bay, and despite their free fall, sir, Toronto is your second wild card team right now.
Yeah, that's going to end pretty soon. They get Dallas tonight. That and the Ottawa game may be the two easiest they have this December. And the HBO cameras will be there to document all of it.
Now, if you're one of those people that was wondering how the realignment is going to affect parity, is going to affect the types of races that we've seen in this league, think of it this way. Let's pretend it's April 1st, okay? April Fools. Mm-hmm. Let's pretend it's April 1st. The Flyers and Devils would be tied with the Rangers in points for third in the Metropolitan, and they'd be 3 points out of the second wild card, 5 points out of the first wild card in the East. So, like, there are going to be some situations where you're going to have a lot of moving parts depending on who drops and who ascends. It's going to dramatically affect the playoff seeding and who makes and who doesn't. So hopefully that holds, because that's my big concern about realignment, is that the ridiculous, crazy, here are the 15 scenarios for this team entering the last few games of the season stuff is going to go by the wayside under this new line. You know what I mean? Like, that was the great thing about the 1-8, is that when you got to the last weekend of the season, you needed a graphing calculator and an abacus to figure out all of the different scenarios as far as teams that still were alive for the playoffs. It was amazing. It was awesome. And I really hope we didn't lose that in this realignment.
10 games tonight, Wish, and one of the big ones, the Boston Bruins will face the Montreal Canadiens for the first time this season.
Yeah, it's been
it's
a
December.
While.
And you know what? Yeah. You know what, though? I like that.
Why?
I like that a lot. I like when you take two traditional rivals, ones you know the game's going to be full of energy and enthusiasm and anger. Oh, let's not forget about anger. And put it towards the back half of the schedule, when games start to really count. And then you have all that emotion and all that on the line mixed in with this rivalry. And a lot of people are bemoaning the fact, oh, how come it's taken this long for these two great rivals to get together? Because it's smarter this way. Hmm. You know it's going to be a dynamite game and a dynamite, you know, a dynamite coupling. Why waste this thing in October?
Yeah.
Why waste this one early? Like, it's not as if you need to light the fuse. That's already been lit between these two teams, right? Oh, I can't believe we waited this long. Well, you know, the one great thing about, and I'll use a wrestling term here, comebacks are always great when it takes a while to get there. You know, when the baby faces out for 7 or 8 minutes and then does the comeback, as opposed to doing the comeback, you know, after the, you know, a couple of hope spots really quick. Like, you know, three minutes that you do the comeback.
Dropping lingo. Hope spots.
Sorry. Hope spots, yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, I like it. I like it better when these types of rivalries are pushed towards the back of the schedule, because then other things start to come and play. Like, oh man, we really need these 2 points, but oh man, I really hate these MFers. I really want to do something right now. Such a great dynamic. I love it. Bravo, Steve Hatzepetros, who makes the schedule. Bravo. This is, I think, and I know a lot of it just comes down to simple fact of arena availability. But as much as it's being a deliberate practice, bravo. I'm on team schedule maker. I'm on team Hetzopetros in this scenario.
A couple things that are sort of interesting to me, at least, with regard to when a team is trailing after the first period, how many times can they come back and who completely folds like a chair at a bat mitzvah? I don't know if that's even an accurate analogy. I'm just going to make it anyway.
A chair at a church picnic.
There you go. Trailing first, after the first period, teams that are trailing. What if I told you something about the New York Rangers? What if I told you that the Rangers have trailed after one 13 times this season and have come back to win once? 1-12, a 0.77, I'm sorry, a 0.077 winning percentage when trailing after the first period. A couple more numbers. The Buffalo Sabres have come back to win 6 games when they've trailed after the first period. But that's not the news. The news is...
Have they won 6 games?
They've trailed after the first period 23 times. And here's the other news you need to know. They've not won a game when they've led after the first period.
Oh, that's not good.
How weird is that?
How bad is... I guess I've done a ton of their games this year for Sportsnet East. How bad is Ottawa after the first? They've given up first puck a number of times.
Yep, and we talked about that with Jason York this week. They've done it 19 times. They're 6-10-3 in those games. The Florida Panthers have trailed after the first period 19 times and have only come back to win 2 of those games. Now you're saying to yourself, but what about the teams that don't suck, Greg? Well, I'm going to tell you about those teams, ladies and gentlemen. St. Louis has only trailed after the first period 8 times. Colorado has only trailed after the first period 8 times. San Jose has only trailed after the first period 9 times. Anaheim has only trailed after the first period 10 times. Ditto Boston. Boys and girls, do you see a trend here?
Don't trail after the first. I know it. I know this one.
Right? I'm by no means a stat geek.
But what does that say about the NHL so far this year?
Well, is this your argument about lack of scoring?
Teams are buttoning it down easier and more often than ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Just get out of the first with the lead, and then we'll sit on it.
Sit on it, bucko, as the great Fonzie used to say.
That's right. Sit on it.
Then the other thing I wanted to talk about statistically real quick, who do you think your face-off leader is right now? Face-off leader in the National Hockey League right now,
based
on 300 face-offs taken, minimum. Who is the best guy in the league?
Okay.
Right,
it's probably either Antoine Vermette or Vladimir Sobotka.
Oh, my God. Good job on adding the second one to that list, sir. Because it is Vladimir Sobotka, a 62% winning percentage in the dot for Sobotka, 303 face-offs taken. Second in the league based on 300 attempts is Paul Gostad at 60.8.
Yeah, he's always been really good. Yeah,
Patrice Bergeron. We're not going to count Malhotra. He's under 300.
Where's Vermette? Where's Vermette?
Gordon, 58.3. Yep. Vermette, 50%. So Vermette would be fifth if we kick out Malhotra because he doesn't have 300 attempts yet.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's been money. I've just done back-to-back Phoenix games for Sportsnet West, the Edmonton and Calgary game, and this guy gobbles guys up at the dot.
By the way, for those wondering, because I know you often are, because this man is terrible at face-offs, and it's always fun to ridicule him.
Oh, jeez.
413 face-off attempts, 166 face-off wins. Ladies and gentlemen, do not let Ryan Nugent-Hopkins take your face-offs.
Yes. Still, but do you get the feeling, though, that it's still more than anything else a strength thing with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins?
Well, that he weighs 70 pounds, yeah.
That's it. It's still a strength thing with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins.
So, but again, he's a kid. You hold out hope that he's going to get to his Crosby years where he hones that part of his game and becomes something significant, because that's what Sid used to suck at face-offs.
But, dude, the thing about Crosby was, didn't that metamorphosis happen, in one summer? It was almost like one summer, Sidney Crosby said, I'm going to go out and buy 300 buckets of pucks, and someone's going to drop them for me. I'm just going to practice taking draws in July and August, right. And that's all I'm going to do.
Much like he made himself a better penalty killer, much like he did everything else.
Shooter, I know.
He's earned it. You know, it's God-given talent, but he's also honed his instrument, as they say. A couple more underrated players, because I know you got to go, or underdog players, because I know you have to go. Sarah Leitner writes in, my favorite underdog player is Nathan Gerby. I'm 5'2", so I love the smaller players, and Gerby never seems to give up. And as you may remember, I have a corgi named after Gerby.
That's right. I remember that.
That's right. Yeah. John Roberts, would you consider Radim Verbata an underdog underrated player, but he does have a tendency to disappear in the playoffs? I consider Verbata underrated, not an underdog.
And I would imagine that would be one of the next deals we hear coming down the pike. I can't see Phoenix letting go of Radim Verbata, and he'll be UFA at the end of the year. No. He'll be back.
Although, once again, where is he going to go? I mean, like,
that's where he plays, man. That's where he plays well.
Trevor Crowell writes in, of the guys you wish the best for, Marty Havlett. When that guy is fully armed and operational, he is a joy to watch. Amazing skills, making other players look dumb, but he can never shake the injury bug. That is a guy who, without question, is in that sort of injury thing there. And then finally, Amit Joshi writes in, how can you not root for Matt Duchene? After his awful season 2 years ago where he injures both legs, people are ready to concede Tavares being leagues better and talk about trading him. He takes a dirt cheap contract, unlike someone, tells fans and management he needs to prove himself, and goes and trains with Crosby, has finally now emerged as a leader and a bona fide superstar in the league. I would agree that Matt Duchene is an underdog in some ways, although I think that changes dramatically this season when he probably has, you know, played himself on the Olympic team, is going to be a heart candidate for that team if he comes, you know, the whole thing. So
coming into the season,
underdog for sure.
Yeah, another one of those guys you mentioned working out with Sidney Crosby and with that camp. There's a great story to be written and to be told about that camp that Crosby works with, led by Andy O'Brien. Mm-hmm. It's a really nice stable of players that have taken their game to the next level, and it's all led by Crosby. The Andy O'Brien story is really good. When you throw Duchene in there, I think Nathan MacKinnon is working out with Andy O'Brien. I know Sam Gagner does as well. There's a really good something going on there with Andy O'Brien's camp, and Matt Duchene's more further evidence of it.
Good stuff. All right, we're out of here. With that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Well, well, well.
Hey, I'm Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports, and here with our special guest, line, Greg Wyshynski. Hey, Greg, how are you? Like, that's what I expected to happen at the top of that show. Hey, the audio quality is going to be, like, bang on awesome now.
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
For me, it's a combination of there being a cathartic release of misery through the masochism of being a sports fan.
When your job, nay, your existence, is telling people how much they suck.
Jeff Merrick of Sports.
Wish, I turned around and there he was, gone.
All right, this is going to kind of sound weird today, folks.
Dump it hockey.
What do you see when you watch Ethan MacKinnon?
Jeff, I've had enough.
What's that?
What?
Hello? Yeah.
You there?
So bad. One day we'll be pros. Until then, just be right.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Stick tap to Joe Pack for the
that's awesome
the tech problems intro celebrates all of the various audio digital and oral A-U-R-A-L problems we've had here on the show.
That's great. I love
that. And speaking of the show, that's
man.
It
Yeah, and listen, that's it for me for the week. I've got some life stuff to do tomorrow, so I'm out. I got life. You know, tomorrow's one of those days for me. You ever have these days wish where you just say, you know what, I'm putting aside 24 hours to catch up on life, and that's what I'm doing tomorrow. I got a bunch of stuff that I'm backed up on. So I will not be available for service. Greg, you flying solo tomorrow? Or are you going to punt the show?
Oh, I'm flying solo, all right, because, listen, it's Game Show Friday, and we ain't skipping on Game Show Friday. So gird your loins, people. I don't know which one we're going to play yet, but we're going to do something.
I think it's like Finnish Independence Day tomorrow. I want you to do something on Finns. There's some anniversary that the Finns are celebrating tomorrow.
Well, you know, some of us make Finnish Independence Day every day. I don't know about you. You clearly don't have the love of Finland in your heart like I do.
No, and nor the WWF, as we saw with the Ludwig Borga character.
Ludwig Borga.
When did USA have beef with Finland?
That's in Vince's mind. Like every country that's not America can become a villain.
Anytime. At any time.
Captain Belgium.
Who are you looking at, Swiss? Switzerland?
Oh, fear not, wrestling nation. It's me, Lieutenant Thailand, coming to take over your precious WWE.
Boo, Thailand, you suck, USA!
I would love to play the Let's Go Through the Globe, whether it's, you know, Uganda or Okinawa.
Well, they've done Mexico, Canada. Oh, they've done Finland. They've done England.
Have they done
Ireland.
They've done
Russia.
Iran?
They've done Iran because they flipped Sergeant Slaughter to Iran.
That's so hilarious.
I'm sorry. They flipped Slaughter to Iraq, and then Sheik was Iran. He was from Tehran, allegedly. Yeah, they've covered a lot of countries. Many, many countries. Sweden?
Has there been an evil Swede? This is where we need Mark Cole right now.
Besides Nicholas Cronwall. He's the most evil. Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. Ulf Samuelsson is the most evil Swede. Nicholas Cronwall is maybe the most controversial Swede. He's an anti-hero.
Thomas Sandstrom? He got pretty dirty. But not as dirty as Ulf Samuelsson. You're right.
Ulf Samuelsson and his sidekick, K-Gel.
Ulf Stirner, for all you old school hockey fans, Ulf Stirner was a dirty SOB.
They've done Japan with Mr. Fuji.
Of course.
Have they done China? Well, Sean Waltman did. But thank you.
Triple H, too. Right?
That was my single favorite wrestling sign of all time was somebody holding up a Monday Night Raw one day. I'd rather be in China.
That's a great one. They did Mongolia with Killer Khan.
Right. Australia they've done. Well, I don't know. Outback Jack really wasn't like a villain. The sheep herders from New Zealand were villains at some point.
They started as villains.
I'm sorry.
Became,
the Bushwhackers.
Yeah. They're always the sheep herders to me. Always the sheep herders to me.
Wow. I think they've really spanned the globe.
Scotland with Piper?
For sure. Oh, without question.
Even though he was born in Winnipeg.
Yeah, but he's still Scottish. And for
was he born in Toronto?
Kayfabe purposes. Yeah. Not done the Antarctica.
Uganda with Kamala.
Right.
Even though he's from, like, Mississippi.
They've done Tonga.
Some way, shape,
or form. Puerto Rico they've done. Samoa they've done, obviously.
Yeah, tons.
This is a pretty good geographic spread. Oh, Italy? I'm sure they've done. Oh, they have to have done Italy at some point, right?
Bruno Sammartino's big baby face. Have they done Italian?
There has to be an evil Italian somewhere. Oh, well, like Steve Lombardi. Doesn't really count.
If it's got a vowel at the end of its name, it's evil Italian.
It's evil Italian, absolutely.
Okay, gotcha. Right.
Well, they have to have done like a mafia character at some point, right? Maybe not.
They never did a Sopranos knockoff, did they?
Finally, I have to tell you right now, Ken Confirm at KENNKONFIRM. Ken Confirm tweets in, I, Ken Confirm, tomorrow is Finnish Independence Day.
I had it right? All right.
One last thing. Matthew Toy writes in. This is important. Nunzio and Vito were mafia wrestlers.
Oh, right.
That's right. I forgot about Vito.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
And obviously, the WWE also covered Greenwich, Connecticut with the Mean Street Posse. Just again, that one is strictly for Sean Leahy, ladies and gentlemen. The Mean Street Posse, one of my favorite gimmicks of all time.
I just followed Ken Confirm.
Ken Confirm. I can confirm.
Whoever you are, and I'm sure it's multiple people who are doing all these Twitter accounts. God bless you. You make my life happy. And all you people that continue to send in random penguins, and I still smile.
And he's doing it. He's doing it. I can confirm Alexander Steen has 3 goals and 7 assists in his last 10 games against the Islanders.
I confirm.
Oh,
Jesus, that's great. And just for the record, it's neither myself nor Merrick. So that's why we don't want to do these things. We want someone to do this for us. Now, somebody out there get going on my goddamn Wikipedia page, will you please? It's been years since I had one.
Yeah, talk about Greg's porn star past.
My Wikipedia page got spiked because I was called not notable. Versus Rogers Money over here, who's like very notable, evidently.
That's Mr. Rights Holder to you, thank you.
Yeah, I should be able to at least ride this guy's coattails on the Wikipedia, right?
No.
Does a show with notable Canadian broadcaster Jeff Merrick.
Is MVSW even on my Wikipedia page? I don't even know. I haven't looked there in a while.
Oh, it's. I leave it to the plebeians to update my Wikipedia page. I don't have the time counting all the Rogers money to look at my wiki page.
That's cheap if you update your own wiki page.
Well, that's why I haven't created my own yet. Because I don't want to be that guy. I decided to hold a birthday party for myself.
Just go and do it. Just make your own wiki page. You're a lonely, lonely boy.
All right.
Just go and do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. I'll be back tomorrow. Merrick will be back on Monday, and we'll go from there. Thanks. Bye.